This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Wow, man, a lot of people wanting to get on board and call today. Every time the phone lines have been open, they've been full. 206-421-3776. We've got about a half hour here before Pete Carroll, where we'll attempt to take some more of your phone calls and how you guys are feeling this morning after a really difficult loss yesterday. A loss in which the Seahawks running game seemed to be working, and yet they went away from it. A loss in which Chris Carson seemed to be effective, and yet he was apparently benched for the second half, though Pete Carroll said they needed him on special teams for a couple of plays. Doesn't make a lot of sense. A game in which Russell Wilson was largely ineffective, took six sacks, seemed to finally get things moving, only to throw a game-losing pick and fumble at the very end. It was a very, very different kind of Seahawks game, Brock, than I think we're accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, when you face Justin Verlander, you can live with losing 2-1, right? You just kind of know the way that game's going to look. Last night, with no Bobby, with no KJ, with no starting corner opposite Shaquille, or even the backup, to that, you know, you can kind of feel like, well, if Chicago moves the ball up and down the field and they score 28 points. You lose 28-27. You know, offense that has its weapons back, does some of the things they did the week before. Russell gets into rhythm. You can live with that. That was not the case at all, man. Defense played great. You realize the defense right now in their Super Bowl year in 2013 had 39 takeaways. 39 takeaways that year. I think they ended up plus 19. Unbelievable, right? They're on pace for that.
They've got five takeaways in two games, and yet they're 0-2.
That's exactly right. Five picks.
Just didn't see this coming, and not with some of what we saw in the preseason and the offseason. It really has not gone the way we'd expect. Russell Wilson in this game, just so you have the numbers, 22 of 36 for 226 yards, two touchdowns, one pick, six sacks for 24 yards, and a rating of 86.1, which oddly was ahead of Mitch Trubisky, who was at 83. So what happened? What was going on with Russell Wilson? I'll give you my quick take, Brock, and then I really want yours as quarterback, and we'll hear from the people. I don't think Russell was as bad as those numbers show. I think Russell does not have a lot of weaponry outside. I think there was not a lot of separation, and in a close game on the road, he was unwilling to take chances until the fourth quarter. When it finally came down to the fourth quarter in a one-score game, they started running the ball again. They started moving it. Russ got hot. He threw a daring throw to Tyler Lockett for the touchdown, which was great. And then, unfortunately, and if there's one thing I'll truly hold him accountable for in this game, it would be the pick that he throws, the pick six in crunch time. You know how I feel about quarterbacks. As long as you have done a good job of making the game close and late, it is on you, and you get judged by what you do in the final few minutes of the game.
Yep.
And in the final few minutes of the last two games, Russell has a two fumbles and one pick, and that just simply isn't going to cut it. And I don't know that suggests there's anything wrong with him, or just that those three drives just sort of didn't go right on those three plays.
It certainly suggests, Mike, that he's not playing with just anticipation and just a free will to just cut it loose and let it go. I don't think there's any question about that. I need to hear a couple things from Russell Wilson here, and so do you. Cut number 11. Russell talks about that pick six. I gave it to you in a lot of detail in Blue 42. Here was the QB on just how that happened and what went down. Cut number 11 here from Russell.
I made a good play. Put his foot in the ground, made a good play. And so that's what it was. You know, we kept fighting, though. We could have a chance, and we've done it before, and unfortunately it didn't work, but...
Yeah, Russell, you got to see him. He put his foot in the ground, and you got to see that before that ball comes out. You see the separation and cushion? You got to see what that first step is from Prince Mukamura, because he sat on everything last night, which has been a part of this, right? These guys and these receivers, they've been sat on. There haven't been. If you just looked at, man, and you measured, Salk, the amount of space that Case Keenum, and even last night on a lot of shorter passes, just the separation that those quarterbacks have had and some of the air around the receivers versus Seattle's, it is a stark contrast. Asked about holding the ball here, lastly, cut number 12. Russell, what was going on with you holding the ball in the pocket?
First, people are going to say, the offensive line. I mean, you said last week maybe half of them were on you. Tonight, it looks like you held the ball a long time and there was coverage downfield. You said some of that was just a risk-reward for you to hold the ball.
You know, I think they made some plays. That's what I think, you know. A good defense, you know. So we'll watch the film, and we'll figure out how to continue to get better. That's the only assessment we really need right now. We're right there. You know, we believe that, you know, and we're going to find our way.
Yeah, he's in no rhythm. Okay, he's in no rhythm answering those questions. He's just giving credit to Prince Amukamara and to the Bears, and Russell does a lot of that, but there's no, in that moment, any self-reflection. There's no, in that moment, a clear answer and concise answer as to what's going on, and there is no rhythm and confidence between he, his receivers, and coordinator. That triangle, man, that you have to have. You have to have it. You have to have it when that call comes in your headset, like, yes, this is awesome. And then you have to believe that your receivers are going to win and get open. And all of those things have to work in some unison. And there is so much new, and you don't want to hear it. And it's not an excuse, because he's got to overcome it as a franchise guy. But there's so much newness in all of that, and there's nothing settled. And confidence to just go out and let it rip and cut it
loose. Let me ask you a couple questions, then I'll start taking some of these calls. How different is this offense from what there was before? Like, for how different for Russell Wilson is what they're doing now from what they did last year?
Yeah, not much.
So that shouldn't create that much discomfort. It's not a totally new system with new concepts, right? A lot of it is pretty similar.
A lot of the concepts, yes, are pretty similar.
Okay.
But
how different is this group of receivers without Doug Baldwin than it's been even a year ago?
Yeah, that's a pretty stark contrast. Because, you know, you've got Jerron Brown, who's new. You got David Moore, who's new. You got Will Disley, who's new. You got Nick Vinette, that still can't catch a ball. You know, you've got a lot outside of Tyler Lockett. Brandon Marshall's new. So outside of Tyler right now, that is all incredibly new. And you have no time to really work with them in training camp,
how
preseason.
How important is that, being new?
Well, for this quarterback at 5'10 and 5'8, I think it's critical.
Why?
I think I am feeling his height more of an issue this year than I have the previous six.
Why?
Because, Mike, he can't see some of those things, especially when that rush is all up in his face. He needs to just throw with anticipation and fully believe that those guys are going to be there. At 6'5", Mike, I needed to do that. Okay, my buddy Dane Looker, and I've told this story how many different times, I could close my eyes. I probably still could. If I could drop back, I could probably still do that today, all right? And throw some of these routes, because I just know where he is.
Does he need to anticipate more and take more risk?
In some of these moments, absolutely.
There will be more there will be more negative
there
plays
will.
If that happens.
There will.
I got to tell you, I don't think I disagree on that last point. And I'm with you all the way through. I'm okay with him playing like that. I really am. Until he can't anymore. I'm okay with the governor being on at full bore until he just absolutely needs to cut it loose.
Okay.
Because Brock, based on what I've seen, there's no separation. Based on what I've seen, this group of wide receivers without Doug Baldwin is not open. Based on what I've seen, the concepts that Brian Schottenheimer is calling in the passing game are not leading to any success. And based on what I've seen, all the things that you talked about when they drafted Russell Wilson, all the ways to get him into a good throwing position with good throwing lanes to avoid the fact that he's not 6'4", have not been present. We haven't seen the half rollouts and mini sprint outs and play action and all the things that Russell Wilson is great at. It's like Brian Schottenheimer doesn't recognize the 11 players he has on his team, especially his quarterback.
I think all that is fair. And I would say to you that when it comes to like being aggressive, it's not throwing necessarily in all those windows. It is just then running a little bit. It's just saying, you know what? We've got to do a little bit of zone. We just got to do this. And if I got to protect myself a little bit after I scramble, I got to do it.
But if quote unquote holding Russ accountable, the big buzzword these days, means that, you should have taken off. You should have stayed in the pocket. You should have done this. You shouldn't have done that.
Yep.
Well, great. Congratulations. You're holding Russell accountable. I hope it feels great. I hope everybody's happy out there, Doug, and everybody else is mad because Russ isn't held accountable.
Right.
Well, good for you. Whoop-de-doo. Russell's accountable now. He's standing in the pocket and taking sacks. You happy?
Yes.
You happy with your little text chain with Sherm? You guys laughing it up about how great it is that Russell's being held accountable and now everyone can see that you were the great reason why everything went well here. I hope you're happy.
Yep.
You're holding Russell accountable. Congratulations. 206-421-3776. And in the meantime, the guy's been neutered into not being himself.
Mm.
Good job, everybody. Great work. More Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Pete Carroll coming up in 15 minutes. You're not going to want to miss this. 206-421-3776, phone number. We'll get to some of your calls here in a moment. One interesting thing about Pete and these interviews, Brock, that we've learned over our time is that we can spend 2.5 hours with one narrative and one view of how the game went, mm-hmm. and Pete Carroll shows up, and within a moment, you're like, oh, he sees this totally differently, and he just can kind of put a completely different spin on a game and maybe make you feel a lot better. So looking forward to hearing Pete here in 15 minutes, and there's a lot of questions for him. Questions about what happened to the running game, questions about what happened to Chris Carson, and a lot about Russell Wilson as well. A few things going on here. One, is this idea of accountability. If you're telling me that Russell looks hesitant and Russell looks, you know, unwilling to be and do all the things that make Russell unique and special, then shame on anybody for trying to hold Russell accountable. That's a joke to me. And your text messages are all over the board on that, both mm-hmm. people who agree and those who think I'm totally insane. Fine. That's okay. I want to see Russell be Russell. I like the guy that I've seen for the last 5 or 6 years. I don't want to see a major change. I want to see some read option. I want to see him be conservative early and then win the games late. I want to see him in charge of everything and doing his thing. There's a whole yeah. chain going on now on Twitter of Ben Baldwin, who's doing a good job with The Athletic, going through what's happened right before Russell threw the pick. And in the previous couple of plays, it looks anyway as if Russell changes two plays at the line of scrimmage. Pete then calls a timeout with 12 seconds left on the play clock. Sheesh. And then
don't worry about that. I got you. Blow right by that.
And then they go out, they run one running play, and mm-hmm. then Russell throws the pick.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, we'll see, and I don't know how much detail he's going to get into. If those are check with me's and run pass options and plays got to come in faster if you want me to check all of this stuff, that road, and that's one of the Kyle Brown, you know, can go down and chase a rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. We could do that for an hour as far as what all of that means, and only those three guys probably largely know the answer to it, and I don't know how much of it they're going to be willing to share. Mm-hmm. I know this, that Russell needs you. Hey, Doug, Russell needs you. And you know what, Doug? You need Russell. And that's the beauty of football. And it functions and it fires its very best when egos are all dropped at the door and everybody understands that. But unfortunately, we live in a world that's got to put a flag right here and say, it's all about this MVP, it's all about Russell, it's all about this, all about that. Or on the other side of it, with some of the players, they're like, no, it's never about the quarterback, you know. And we just live in a world that is that, that's that polarizing.
Let's grab a couple of these calls before the coach. 206-421-3776. Isaiah's in Yakima. Hi, Isaiah. Good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up?
Not much. So I wanted to call and say that it's a lot about that accountability piece. It'd be nice for not only Pete to address it in the press conference or verbally within himself, but also Russell. Have some self-accountability. It's okay to be cautious, but with the time or the team constructed the way it is, he needs to be back to that 2012.
Does he, though? I mean, but hold on. Isaiah, with 5-6 minutes left in this game, it's a one-score game, and the Seahawks have the ball. I understand the frustration, and you want to see this offense go out and score 30 points. But with a couple minutes left in the game, they have the ball in a one-score game on the road.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you want it in his hands with a one-possession game. But there's times in the game where you can live to play another day. Instead of taking an unwanted onward sack in the goal line situation when we're backed up, he could have just dumped it at the Peter Carson and not taken that hit.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of those plays more so than anything else.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's two or three throwaways in there, Isaiah. I appreciate the call. This is not 10 or 15 plays. I think there are a couple plays there. Just throw it. Just throw it out of bounds for your team. And you saw this shift in 2015 because the first half of 2015 felt a lot like these couple games. Mm-hmm. They did. It just felt like, man, all of these sacks, and they're piling up at a historic rate. Halfway through that year, Mike, I think they were on pace for 70 sacks. You know, first two games, you have six sacks. I believe that's what happened one other time in this league. Of back-to-back weeks of 6-plus sacks on one guy. So you've got to, and the messaging was, it's going to turn. It is going to flip. You're going to throw the ball away. We're going to shift to this offense to get the ball out of your hand. And you saw that worked beautifully. And I think there is, you know, 2-3 of those plays last night where that ball's just got to sail. It's just got to get out and avoid the negative play.
I understand what you're saying.
And I know you say no, but hold on.
If he squeaks
through a lane right there, you can take some of that risk.
And so what's really the big difference on second or third down between, you know, second and 10 or second and 13?
I don't think there's that big a difference. I would cut it through it lastly this way. Okay, and ask over the course of this week and these weeks and the first half of this season, do his teammates need that? Not with you or me.
They need him to throw the ball away?
No. Do they just need him to empower them back to 2011, 2012, right?
That may be.
Right?
That
do his teammate, hey, man, you got to give me a shot here. I know it's a tight window, and I know that we don't have 6 years of background like you had with Doug and Jermaine.
But they could also
guys.
Win enough yes? to give him that opportunity. Get open and allow him to throw you the ball. Tony's in Great Falls. Go ahead, Tony.
Thanks, guys. I'm just wondering if, is Brian Schottenheimer getting in Russell's head too much? Is he holding him back? Is he not letting him be what he used to be? Because he looked unsure. He looked hesitant. I mean, even on the strip sack, he looked down at the pocket around him to see what was going on before he tried to throw the ball away and they stripped it. So I don't know. Are they restraining him too much? You know, why don't they build on what he has accomplished over the years instead of trying to change him?
I think all very fair questions. I think rushing to any just one conclusion is a little bit dangerous right now. To sit here and for me to say that the relationship between he and Schottenheimer has nothing to do with this, I can't do that. I can't say that. That this is all new, man. You know what I love having for 8 years on my college football games, where there actually is some parallels between quarterbacking and running a show and making decisions and the number of split-second decisions we make in a broadcast every single play of every single game of give me this shot and give me this replay and give me this all-22 and trust me that I'm going to draw this right. And trust me, right? There's a ton of them. And you know what I love? The comfort of working with a guy for 8 years on the other end that knows me and I know him. And for 6 years, for better or worse, Russell knew exactly what that voice was coming from the other side of what that guy saw, of what that guy wanted, of knowing Russell inside and out. And after 2 weeks, that relationship is very much in progress and very much in work.
Well, this is going to be interesting, man. We've been waiting for this all day. The Pete Carroll Show is coming up next with a lot of questions about a weird loss for the Seahawks yesterday. Pete Carroll sits down with us coming up. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
All right, waiting on Pete Carroll, who should be joining us shortly. It's Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. A lot of conversation today about Russell Wilson. A lot of criticism yesterday, certainly on the internet, and we've heard quite a bit of it here through the text machine and the phones today. And I don't know. I guess the thing I'll just keep coming back.
Did you say internets, plural?
Yes, the internets. Gotcha. The question is this. Do quarterbacks just get bad? Because I don't think they do. And the game of football is so different from in baseball. A pitcher can be great and then not be good anymore. They can lose their stuff. They can lose their command. They can lose the spin rate. They can lose any number of things about their stuff, especially as they get older. The wear and tear on their arm changes things drastically. Mm-hmm. Innings will catch up with them. Pitchers can go from great to not great. Hitters can 1 year be good and the next year have a bad year and then be good again. That happens all the time in baseball. Football doesn't really, that doesn't happen. You don't have players, especially quarterbacks, that go from being great to being mediocre, unless there are huge factors that are weighing on them. Maybe it's the rest of the team, maybe it's injury, maybe it's scheme. There's got to be some other factor for a quarterback like Russell Wilson to go from playing at the level he has been at the last few years, essentially an MVP level, to being somebody that a lot of people in town are super upset with his play. I don't think he just went from being good to being bad, not at this age. Yeah, all right, Eli Manning got bad and old. Matt Schaub was never that good. Like, there are some names you could throw out there.
Mm-hmm.
Guys don't go from being MVP candidates to not playing well. That's just not, that doesn't happen in football.
I think there's only two guys right now over the last couple decades that just doesn't really matter, the supporting cast, and that's Brady and Aaron Rodgers. That those two guys are so elite, it really doesn't matter who the receivers are.
And even with Brady, he's always had time. Say what you want about the receivers.
But he plays into that.
He's always
Mike,
had
but
time.
But he plays into it by getting the ball out, by manipulating things. He has proven over two decades that it really doesn't matter what's in front of him. Even now, he's lost Nate Solder over the last few years. He's lost Lyman, and he just makes that group better. And Aaron Rodgers is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Just about everybody else is going to have a little ebb and flow. Matt Ryan and Big Ben and Drew Brees, have they gotten off to brilliant starts this year? Matt Stafford, have they all gotten off to great starts and played at elite levels and MVP? No. No, and Big Ben's throwing like six picks, right? Matt Ryan, week number one, just, whoa, what is throwing 40% and can't make anything happen in the red zone. He can't do this, and he can't do – you need that position just save for Aaron and Tom, and maybe that is the expectation. It's certainly where Russell wants to be, right? Russell wants to be right there with those two guys. Wants to be the greatest to ever play the game. And if so, then he's got to get to that level. And, you know, I think for him, the final step in his true evolution is, can you really make whatever is around you that much better? And I'll continue to say it, and I said it last week, you know, just needing some of the comfort of people around him, just about any quarterback that's ever played has to have that.
And with that, let's talk to the coach.
Stay with these guys now. Coach them up. Keep them going.
The Pete Carroll Show. The first word from the Seahawks head coach every Monday at 9:30 with Brock and Salk.
That's exactly what you want.
Presented by Banner Bank, VenueKings.com, and Les Schwab Tires on 710 ESPN Seattle.
All right, here's Coach Carroll. As he said, he can't wait to get started. We got a lot to get to today, Coach. It was, I think, obviously a tough one yesterday. From your view, what happened?
Well, we didn't start well. Gosh, we had so many problems up front in general. It wasn't the up front part of it, but we weren't able to control the pass rush, and we thought we would be able to do a better job of that. And I ripped back through it again this morning here to look at it again so I could help you understand. And there was I'm finding Russ over trying a little bit. He's pressing in difficult situations to try and see if he can come up with a way to make something happen instead of just getting rid of the football. And I think something, you know, that you said about maybe some familiarity, you know, and that comfort that you have could help us. There was two different hot situations, and Diz missed one, and you know, he needs to look, and Russ looked to him on a pressure, and he wasn't quite there. And there's another one on a play action when he's got to get rid of the ball in a hot situation, did not take a sack that he could have done and was prepared to do. We did it during the week and all that. So there's some things like that, but in the long yard situations, we ate the football a couple times. We need to get rid of the ball and just give up on the play because it's not happening, and not take an additional pressure, you know. And so that just adds up to him, and it's hard. It makes it hard on him. So you saw us, we turned it around in the sense in that we got back to going and playing football, and we mixed it pretty good in the second half. Although I'm really disappointed the first two drives, you know, when we were backed up and we came out chucking it, and we wanted to see if we could, you know, nail a couple of shots coming out. And not hitting those didn't give us the rhythm that we needed to start. So it took us a while to get the second half started. Once we did, I felt like we did move it around and got some stuff going. So it's a difficult time again, and we need to do better. You know, and I need to do better. And you know, I make mistakes. You know, I misread a little bit of something happened. I was off on the thing I said about Chris about that. He was on special teams a couple of plays, but I thought that's what happened, and I just misread him on the sidelines a little bit and didn't clearly understand. And so, you know, I just want to give Rashad a chance to go play. And when he did, and then Chris never really gets back in the game, it feels like, what, did you bench him or something? That didn't happen. It just was the way the things turned, and so I miss it a little bit.
So help me understand with Russ, because it's not uncommon, especially in the college game where so much of the QB run has come to life today, and coaches don't want to take away that great strength of that playmaking, right? You just don't want to diminish that and say just throw it away, because Russell's made some of the biggest plays of his life, right, by extending plays and doing
exactly
that. So how do you navigate that line? How do you coach him? You know, kind of navigate it with Shoddy for the first time, and then most importantly with Russell. How do you
in some of the situations, like when it's 3rd and 14 or something like that, we don't need to take another loss right there, you know, because it's so hard to make that conversion anyway. So, you know, we'd like to take a look. If it's there, boom, take it. If not, get rid of the ball and just let's go kick it, you know, and not worry about that. We're going to kick the ball well. We're going to change field position. All that kind of stuff is part of the thinking, as opposed to let me give one extra shot to try to make it and then we get hit again. It's just the momentum of getting the rush building on you is a factor, and we would like to eliminate that by not giving them the shots at us. So that's one. And that does go right to Russ's competitiveness. Man, he's a battler, and he's going to try and figure it out, and he has so many times, but maybe not then, not now, not in these, and keep us flowing a little bit better so that we don't have to take the negatives. And the negative plays are really difficult, and it kind of adds up on you somewhat.
We're a slave to the TV copy is all we can see. So when we see Russell take 5 sacks in the half, we can't tell who's open. Is he missing open receivers, or are there some issues with guys getting open?
No, there was a couple plays when, you know, we ran routes that were we're trying to get the ball well down the field, and they're sitting back waiting, and we know that it's going to be hard, but we're going to try to take a chance. We know how to do it, and they get covered up, and so he has to make the decision, do I give up on this play or not? And Russ is not one to do that. That's not in his nature, but we need to get better at that so that we don't know. The main thing is stay out of those situations, and then we can stay on rhythm. So if you want to look at like five sacks, there's a hot route one time. There's another hot route on a play action, totally different concept. And then we got covered, and he needed to move, and he got covered, and he needed to move and get the ball out and get rid of it. And throw the ball in the dirt, basically. And that added up. There's four of them right off the bat. We got knocked. Remember the time we got knocked back into him with I think CJ or something like that, right in his mug. Well, he got in trouble right there, and he tried to get out, and he tripped and fell. And so there's reasons for all of these things. But I think the main thing I can help him with is we got to figure out when it's time to, okay, not this time, and get the ball out, and let's go ahead and kick it and go play football.
What happened on the pick?
He just trusted that he had. I mean, it had been open together. The corner was back, and Mukumara was backed off nice, just like he's supposed to. And he just squatted on the running back. And generally, because there's a seam route going off inside, the zone guys go, they fall off, and they have to honor the seam. But in this one, they were matched up. He didn't have to, and he didn't. And so he just came out and ripped it on rhythm. And that it was just a terrific play and a guess by the guy, and he made it, and it came out right for them. We've thrown tons of those routes in the past, and I don't ever recall that happening, and he just got fooled on it.
How would you characterize the run game, looking at it on tape?
Wasn't bad. I thought we had real good shots at stuff. I thought Chris ran really well early, and then Rashad got himself going a little bit too, which was good. Good to see both those guys. I know that it's a little bit frustrating to not see all the way through, the consistency. But I think we feel like we can continue to work at running the football and run it. I don't have any problem thinking that.
You mentioned after the game that the two series in the third quarter where you threw six times, that was on you, that you had talked to Schottenheimer about trying to be
aggressive. To get up top. I wanted to get a shot. We didn't have to miss them all, at all. But, I did. I got in the shot, and I said, let's see if, we looked at the corners in the first half. We'd seen how they're playing. We just want to take a shot at them. And sure enough, the first time, they roll right into it, and so they lucked out a little bit. But I didn't want to miss all six of those plays now.
No, I understand.
I'm just telling you, I did play a role in that. So that's happened sometimes.
How do you balance that stuff?
Sometimes we hit those things and they work great, right. But in this case, it didn't work.
But how do you balance that in general as the head coach between this desire for a balance in your offense, having some success with the running game early in that, but also the desire to try to hit the big play?
You try to bounce it really well, Mike, and you try to hit it right, and you try to have a good feel for it, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. But most of all, I needed to get, I had factored in a little bit, and I wanted to get away from him after that, and he did fine after I backed off. And I mean, it wasn't a big deal. I just said, let's go after this guy, see if we can get a shot, and I wanted to match up the right receiver with him and all that. We did, and it didn't work out. And then we tried it again, and now we're on third down, and we missed both balls, and I think we missed a check down in there, which would have made the difference, and there you have it. Two situations didn't work out right.
This one was a little challenging, more challenging than normal for me, especially in the first half, because I love the mindset and the run early. They had Khalil Mack mic'd up, and the Fetty came out and smacked him in the face and was just driving him 5 yards down the field. Posick just pancaked a guy. I think on the first run or the second run, just pancaked just right in there, and he's in his face, and they're jawing. I'm like, yes, this is some of that just physical intimidation. This is some of that instead of being the target and letting these guys just tee off and rush, I want to hit these guys in the face. And I felt like that was starting to go, and there just, again, is not the numbers count. There's just not enough of that. And you get to a third and two on the opening drive, right? And I was like, okay, this will be a real interesting call here as you cross 50, and is there a chance to, to run it here and continue for Jermaine and for Ethan and those guys? Correct me if I'm wrong. It feels like they're wired to want to do that.
There's no question that they would love it to happen that way, and we would love to see it happen too, as well as we're mixing. And I think we could have done more. But I thought I felt like we were doing all right. I thought that I wasn't concerned about the running game not being there at all. I thought we had what we needed to mix it the way we wanted to.
Can we come back to the Carson thing? I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So
I just looked at him on the side. He looked like he was it looked like he was kind of worn down a little bit. And I knew that he was a factor in special teams, and I just missed it. He wasn't – Brian had taken him off on a couple things, and so because he was running the ball well. So, right. I just missed it. And I thought that's what happened when I looked at him. But it wasn't like to bench him. It wasn't like to, I was disappointed with him. And it just – the plays came on. We still wanted to see the other guys too and mix them in and that's just the way it went, you know. So it I didn't read it right. And when I commented about that, I wasn't clear. I just misread the situation.
You used the word development in talking about Penny. You said last night that you wanted to see where he was at in his development. How crucial a word is that for you at this early part of the season?
Well, it's a statement of confidence in what we're doing and that we're going to be okay and that we can develop, bring our guys along and work towards the heart of the schedule and all of that. That's not new. That's not a new thought. You know, that's just part of seeing the guys. We got a really good, talented kid. He worked really hard during this week. He weighed in about 8 pounds less than he did from the week before, coming off all of that time when he was not able to practice full speed. He just was ready to go, and I just wanted to see how we do. And that's just part of it. I wanted to see how we mix so that we're doing things right as we go through the stretch of it. That's the coach's decision. Again, I feel like I'm letting you know some insights so you know I can screw up too. You know, I can make mistakes and I can err. In that case, I liked seeing him. I wish Chris and Rashad could have both carried the ball, but that's the way it worked out.
You know what else was challenging is your defense just rose up.
Played really good.
Bradley McDougald and Michael Kendrick. Oh, my gosh. Like, they were just on it.
Yeah.
You know, guys. And for Kendricks, who was on the streets, and they were just jumping routes and hitting people, and they were on it. You know, as you kind of watch that game tape, and, you know, some of the frustrations offensively, is it balanced off in any way with what you watched defensively?
No, it truly is. I thought that was really evident, particularly, you know, after getting through the film and seeing where I could start to figure out who made all the hits and all that. A number of guys played well. The upfront guys did a good job. To hold their running backs to 2 yards of carry, you know, those guys, they're determined to run the football. Little Cohen guy is a rocket, as we saw on returns. And Howard is a really good, solid football player. They couldn't run the ball on us, and so that was a combination of the guys up front who played really solid again, and then the backers fitting up right. Austin Calitro did a nice job in his first start in his history, and for Michael to come in and add like that, it was just a nice collective effort. We would never have thought we'd be playing games with KJ and Bobby and all this. You know, you wouldn't think that.
And frankly, in years past, Pete, I mean, you just look at the numbers when those guys have been out. Everybody points at the safeties being out. When those linebackers have been out, those numbers are some of the most startling.
Yeah,
until last night.
Yeah, it was a really good shift in statement. Kenny did a nice job to control the things that we were calling, so the guys could stay in command of the calls, and we weren't able to mix as much. But that was it. That doesn't hurt us because we're a base defensive team anyway. So I thought it was a really good statement of our guys' ability to hang in there, play tough. The running game was in command. The quarterback added, he did a nice job. The couple runs he did added to it. But other than that, I thought we did a real nice job.
What was Michael Kendrick's week like, getting ready to play like that?
Very intense. A very intense week for him. He was just tuned in every minute of every opportunity that was there. You know, he was meeting at night. He was coming in early. He was trying to do everything he could so he could hold up his end of it. And he felt pretty confident. I watched him throughout the pregame and as we started the game and coming off the field. You know, I was wanting just to learn him and figure out what he's all about. And he was very intense and very serious about the corrections and the issues and making sure he knew what the communications were. And he was talking it up. And I thought the guys around him did a really nice job to help him, you know, feel comfortable and have the ability to make some stuff happen.
What do you think of that situation? I mean, it's an odd situation. It's not one that I think the NFL has ever dealt with before, is the idea of someone who has pled guilty to insider trading. Did you talk to him about it? I mean, what did you have mm-hmm. conversations? What was that like?
Yeah, we did talk about it. Talked about it right when we first got together so he could air out, you know, his perspective on it all. So we did. Yeah, we talked through it, and it happened quite a long while ago. He realized that he made a mistake. He admitted to his mistake and paid back whatever he needed to pay back as well, showing the kind of concern and remorse that somebody that erred should show. And then it's taken, you know, it's 4.5 years from when that all took place. So it's been weighing on him heavily, as we can all imagine, and it will continue to. He doesn't come up to hearings until in January, late January or something like that, so where he really knows what happens. So you know, he's in a very difficult situation personally and very frustrated to not be able to speak out, move ahead, and all that. So he finally got a chance, and he handled it beautifully and is ready to take on whatever he has to take on when the time comes.
Is there any indication from the league? A lot of speculation on the outside. Has there been any indication from the league to you guys with his future?
Better off for me to not even enter in this one. You know, there's so much going on there. We do know that we have somewhat of a runway here until they come to make their decisions whenever. I can't tell you even dates or anything right now.
The pick on the sideline, that look familiar at all? On a little fade route, see your cornerback go up there.
Oh, yeah. It was great. You know, it's interesting how, you know, I've shown when Shaq first got here, I showed him how Sherm made it, you know, and how he came to life as a young player. And it was all on long balls, you know, and he would continue to play the long ball just like what happened last night. But he just hasn't had that many opportunities, and he hasn't been beat deep very many times at all. He had one big one in the game, but very few times over last season. And for whatever reason, they went after Sherm a lot, and he just kept turning over those fade routes, you know. And so for him to get a chance to make the play, be in position, he has all of the skills to do that. It was wonderful to see that, and then to get the tip ball, which is great, you know. That's just playing good heads-up football. But I'm teaching Trey the same way, showed him the same tapes, and showed how you can build a career on staying on top and owning the deep ball and let people keep challenging the young guy, and you can make plays on it. So it was nice to see that happen.
Was there an unheralded guy in that defense yesterday who did more than we probably would have noticed from our perspective?
Well, I don't think we missed it. You already talked about Bradley. I thought Bradley played really well. He was doing a number of things in the game plan. He was substituting in some different situations. We played quite a bit of dime. Boy, he made a lot of plays. And he made some plays as a linebacker. He made some plays as a safety. He made some plays in the coverage. So I was really thrilled about him. But I don't think we should miss Austin Kalitro. I mean, he called the whole game. He was in the middle of all of that. He was in every play of the game, and he played hard and tough. And, you know, that's a lot to command. You know, he's controlling the whole situation coming from the sidelines to transferring to the players on the field. And he played tough and aggressive and made some big plays.
That was a little big nickel, I thought I saw there. Was there some big nickel in that game?
I'm surprised that it took so long.
20 minutes.
There were some safeties in there. And
I like it.
Hey, I got one other thing that's just circling around on the outside, if you could clarify at all. It's just some of the interaction with Russell in the fourth quarter on the sideline. You know, just some of the timeout was called, and it looked like there was some pretty good, just not necessarily yelling, but some clarification that had to be made between you and
the second timeout with about 10, 12 seconds left in the play clock.
No, there was nothing. Exchanging, you know, thoughts right there, you know, and he had a thought about something, and Shotty had one, and I was in the middle of listening to it all, but it was just really competitive thoughts about, hey, we can do this, let's go get him this way, you know, and talking through it, but there was nothing.
He seemed a little frustrated calling timeout in that spot, just on the field. Was that a misread?
Didn't want to have to use the timeout. Yeah, we were misaligned a little bit, and we didn't want to waste a play. And he I don't know that he saw that. He said, I could have fixed it. I could have fixed it, is what he said. And we didn't need to call the timeout. But it was getting close, so we did.
Where do you go? Where do you go with this offense from here? What's next for this?
Just keep cleaning it up. And we have to clean up. We have potential to do a lot of cool stuff. And we just got to clean it up and get more accurate and get rid of the negatives. It's really a question of eliminating the negatives. And we have to convert on third down. Look what happened in the second half. We convert on third downs, and the flow of the game is there for us. And 2 of 8 in the first half, you know, which has to do with the rushes and a couple long yard situations and things. We have to get rid of those two aspects of it so that we can play. We worked really hard last week to this week to try to make it happen. And what was most frustrating is that it came out after two quarters. We didn't feel like we had fixed what we tried to fix. And so, that just didn't happen the way we wanted it to. We had really clear intention, and so that's what was frustrating about it.
There's a lot more run game here.
Yeah, there's a ton. There really is. There's a lot of stuff, and you haven't even seen Russ, you know, get out with the football yet, and that will happen too.
Injury updates. Britt looked like he came out.
He hurt his shoulder. Yeah, he got banged on the on the fumble. He went after the ball and got extended in a kind of a funky way there. So we got to see. I don't know the results. The X-rays were negative, so that's a good sign. He got MRIs today.
And then the group that you're hoping to get back. I mean, we got a lot of names that we can kind of run down here. KJ, Bobby.
Yeah, they both. Judging from how they ran last week before we left, and I know they ran over the weekend too, if they came out of that okay, then they have a chance to play. Bobby, I think, it's just because KJ's coming off surgery. You know, it may be another week. I don't know. But it looks like he looked really good. Both those guys were thinking that they were going to play this week as they were working out last week. So let's see what happens there. DJ should be in pretty darn close to getting back as well. I don't know about Doug yet. He's maybe a little bit farther than the other guys. But we have to wait and see, though.
Trey?
Trey was really close. He was running hard in pregame and all that. I'll be shocked if he isn't ready to play. So that's a nice boost for us, and obviously, and we went on the trip without those guys, you know, without Bobby and KJ and Doug. That's a first, you know, it's in a long time, and those guys are. But we should say the other side of it is the way that Dwayne Brown stepped up and the way that Jay Reed stepped up to make sure that the leadership was felt and the direction and the experience was felt was obvious.
And now after playing in two hostile environments, loud, those fans I thought played huge roles in both those games, some of the noise they created, you get your home fans.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if there's a place to start like that Denver thing in sports, you know, that has a record like they had. So that was about as hard as it could be, and we almost nailed that one. And then to go to Chicago, that one, you know, we've been there before, we've won there before, and we handled that. But it is challenging, and it is at issue, and you are in silent count, and you are doing all those things that you got to do, and it will be tremendous to come home. And it feels like, because it's like four of the last five games or something like that, we've been on the road. It's great to come back and play in front of our guys, and I hope that the 12s will be jacked and help us out and give us the kind of feeling so that we can take advantage of the pass rush, you know, and those kinds of things that you saw Frank get a great get off, and he got a freaking sack. Just like that, you know. Well, that's what you hope to get at home, and we make it really hard on our opponents.
Well, if you want to go to that game, we do have tickets. We give them away after every Pete Carroll show, usually Mondays. Today, Tuesday at 9:30. Later in the day, there'll be a video up of one of the highlights of this conversation with the coach. It'll be up at 710sports.com/win. Watch the video, and you can gain more entries by doing things like visiting our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram pages, or downloading our app to gain entries. You can listen Thursday at 8:15. We'll pick a random name of all the people who entered the contest and announce them as the winner. They'll have 5 minutes at that point to call in. So there you go. Watch the video at 710sports.com/win. Well, I got to be good at something.
It's just off the top of his head right there.
It's all that. Extemporaneous.
Yeah, that's right.
Can I tell you? Coach, thanks for coming in today. We appreciate your honesty, as always, and the way you handle these. We always learn something. I think we did today. Yep. So thank you. We'll catch you guys tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. Till then, the hay.
He's in the barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!